Thanks for tuning in to the Sermon Podcast from Reformation Lutheran Church in Las Vegas. Our preacher today is Pastor Matt Medavellis, and our texts are from Isaiah chapter 61, verses 1 through 11. It's the third Sunday of Advent. Thanks for listening, and God bless you.
Grace and peace to you from God our Father, and from His Son, our Savior, Jesus Christ. So I think we'll start today with a confession. So get ready in the comments, and I don't think, well, these will be recorded. So anyone who has ever been reading a book, watching a movie, or doing something like that, and then for one reason or another, you skipped right to the end. I've done it a couple times. I've done it on accident a couple times where I'm just looking later in the book to see what it's going to be like, and I find out a character dies or something. How many of you have ever skipped ahead? Now, what happens to me is Pastor Jason and I, every morning, by the way, we always say hello, and then it's always whatever we're watching on streaming. And I guess Narcos is really big now for Pastor Jason. Hopefully not to get fundraising ideas for the church. Okay. But what I do when I watch things on streaming, I've been doing so much, I'm only on episode 3 of the show I'm watching now called Barbarians. But anyway, I get to a certain point, and then I don't have time, either because I have to go to bed, or I know the kids are getting up, or because Marissa has to watch Sugar Rush. I don't have time to watch more episodes, but I really want to know what happens. So I'll go on the screen and I'll like skip ahead and read all the episode descriptions. Just trying to see. Nothing's been like super spoiled for me by doing that. But I just want to know what happens so bad. Sometimes I just need to read the episode descriptions to get a sense of what the plot lines are going to be. It is such a big temptation to do that, even though at the same time we say we don't want things quote unquote spoiled for us. There are times where we want to spoil it for ourselves. Now, what happened in the synagogue in Nazareth was something really interesting. It was the end getting spoiled. So Jesus comes to the synagogue where he had probably been known his entire life. The synagogue where he was probably looking for lollipops in the narthex and climbing on all of the holy implements, and Joseph had to pull him down. He goes to that synagogue, that very synagogue. He picks up the scroll and he reads, and then just sits down. Now, it's customary at the time. That's kind of where our own practice comes from, where the preacher will read the text, and then we'll deliver some commentary on that text. Jesus reads the text, and then he sits down. And everybody says, well, are we going to get a sermon today? Did you bother to write a sermon? And when everybody is kind of staring at him, he says, oh, you know, don't worry. This is finished. This is done. This is completed. The sermon has been already, the text has already been fulfilled in your hearing. I don't need to talk about it. And what he basically is saying to that congregation is, don't worry, the story is over. I'm here. Now, if you read in the rest of Luke 4, you find out that I'm always shocked by this, but it doesn't go well. They try to throw Jesus off a cliff, which, by the way, I always find shocked, because if anyone ever gave a one-sentence sermon, I think you would throw that pastor a party and, offer her stock options or something if she gave one-sentence sermons. But Jesus gives this one-sentence sermon where all he says is, look, the story's over. The ending is good, and it's here. Relax. So I always think of Jesus kind of like a time traveler who comes from the future. And the future has already been promised to the people of Israel through the prophet Isaiah. a future when the kingdom would be fully restored, when injustice would cease, when people would live close to God and one another. And Jesus comes from the future to say, it's here. Now, it's really funny because usually when we see time travelers in stories, they're usually coming back in time to warn us about something that's coming if we don't change our ways. Or they come back kind of like Arnold Schwarzenegger in The Terminator, who comes to make sure certain people don't live and to mess up with the time stream. I promise not to talk too much about that. Or if, because I need to be a little bit more contemporary, if you watched Avengers Endgame, that's a big part of the plot of the movie. They actually go from the future, which is pretty bleak, into the past to get the Infinity Stones to fix what happened. But Jesus doesn't come from the future into the present to fix anything. He comes to say, look, it's here. This is the future. It's me. You'll notice that when the text says that the Spirit of, or when the prophet Isaiah says, the Spirit of the Lord God is upon me because the Lord has anointed me. The verb in Hebrew is Meshach, right? Messiah. So Jesus in that synagogue proclaimed that he is the Messiah. And he came as a Messiah not to make people do things, but simply to declare good news. So good news is a word you hear a lot in the church. It's what we mean, by the way, whenever we use this churchy word, gospel. It's just from the Anglo-Saxon good spiel, a good report, good things happening. Right? That's what good news means. But good news in Hebrew is this word besar. And a besar means to go and bring good news. So Jesus comes from the future, comes from a place where God has won, where God's love has won, where light has triumphed over the forces of shadow, where all of the oppression and pain that we suffer is over. Jesus has come from that time into the past, and what he does when he comes into our time is he is a besar, right? The Lord has anointed me to bring good news to the oppressed. It's all one word in Hebrew. And it's a very important word. You have to understand what that means to bring good news. Right? We might think of it as good news as, hey, we just got a new order in of French bread, right? Or, hey, good news. I just found out that the Browns game is going to be on national television, right? We think of hearing that report of something that's going to happen. But in the ancient world, a besar, a messenger who brought good news, was somebody who came back usually from a battlefield, right? A messenger came from a battlefield, and if the messenger was coming to besar, the messenger was coming to announce, hey, we've won. Remember, this is the ancient world. There is no social media. There is no text messaging. There's no news cameras. Right? In the ancient world, you would have to wait for days to find out what happened in a battle. I mean, forget the ancient world. Even the Civil War, it took weeks sometimes for people to find out what had happened in battles. Most famous example of this, by the way, happened in Greece, where the armies of Athens and the rest of the Greek city-states won this victory over Persia. And this slave ran 26.2 miles back to Athens to announce Nike, because the Greeks had won a battle at a place called, you may have figured it out, put it in the comments, Marathon. So Jesus is saying, I'm here to bring good news. I'm here to report about a battle. I'm here to tell you that we have won, right? It is, by the way, the same word that the angels use when they find the shepherds on that Christmas Eve or whatever day it was, when they find those shepherds watching over their flocks, they say, I'm here to bring you good news. I'm here to gospel you. I'm here to tell you. I'm here to tell you good things, right? Most important thing to remember, and the reason I'm giving you all this Hebrew, is that when the good news is announced by Jesus, or when that good news is announced about Jesus, what the messengers are saying is that the battle is over. Everything is going to be okay. God has won, justice has won, love has won, and wouldn't that be the craziest thing to say in a year like 2020, right? In a year where we've been full of suffering, such that many of us have never witnessed in our lifetimes, in a year of social unrest, as the country we live in grapples with its terrible past history and our terrible neglect from one another as neighbors because of race. And what a thing to announce in a year when the very fabric that unites us together as a society is being torn apart because of our distrust and fear of one another. It's been quite a year. The battle is raging. And I even saw one of our church members posted a really great thing on Facebook that I thought was funny, where somebody said, what if 2020 is just the trailer for 2021? There's a lot of fear out there because of what we've been through. When we look to the future, it's very hard to say, wow, I think the future is going to be good. But Jesus is like a character who comes from the end of the book to come into the chapter. And by the way, if we read this in an actual book, I think, you know, I'd probably write on the book review, this is silly. But imagine a character coming from the last chapter into one of the middle chapters, one of the chapters where it seems like things are the most bleak, and somebody comes, hey, look, everybody, I've read the last chapter, I've lived in the last chapter, I'm here from the last chapter, it's all going to be okay, this is all going to work out, my Father is going to have God's kingdom, right? And that's the crazy thing about the God that we have. We want a victory in space. We want to see it now. We want to experience all of these good things in our time. But God's victory is one that does not come necessarily in space. God's victory comes in time because there is a day coming. This is what the prophets talked about over and over again. There is a day coming where God will set things right. The prophet talks about it today, talking about the day of vengeance and the year of the Lord's favor. Now, it's interesting to note that whenever you see this word, the year of vengeance, I think it's an unfortunate understanding of many translators that we think of the year of vengeance as kind of like a John Wick movie, and maybe some people expected that from Jesus. Unfortunately, God have mercy, some people still expect that from Jesus, right? A year of vengeance where all the enemies are going to be punished. But one commentator I was reading said, when you see that year of vengeance, what that really means is kind of like when you set a broken clock back again, when you kind of restore everything to the way that it's supposed to go after it's been broken. That's what is in our future. So when you see that day of vengeance in the Old Testament, keep that in mind. But even more importantly, for what the future is going to look like, you have to hear this word, the year of the Lord's favor. Now that refers to a specific day that every Israelite would have known very well. Every seventh year, the debts that anybody owed anyone else were forgiven. All the credit card debt, all the medical debt, and in the ancient world, sometimes paying debts, if you couldn't pay with your wallet or your purse, you paid with your body. Slavery was involved. There was a time every 7 years when all of that was erased, right? It was a day where you set your clock and make sure that it's working again, where everything went back to zero. I'm not going to do a Fight Club reference, right? Every day, every 7 years, this day of the Lord's favor would come. It was the Jubilee year. The slate was wiped clean. Things were forgiven. Everything was set back to its original intent, and everything was made new. And so that's what Jesus came to tell us. When we think about what the end will be, Jesus comes back saying, look, the end is a giant jubilee year. Right? And a jubilee year doesn't mean the way I think most North Americans think about it, that, you know, and I've unfortunately preached this at too many funerals, but I usually don't have time at funerals to get into this, right? We think that we're just going to go up into heaven and we're going to get a mansion and we're going to relax and people who like to golf are going to play golf and people are going to get to fish. I don't know if that's up there, but we have a way of just thinking about the end of time as just having all of our needs and desires fulfilled. But what the prophet Isaiah says about the day of the Lord is it's not only about us. It's about our neighbors. When a victory is won for a people, it's won for all of the people. Right? This is what God is working towards. This is what God is bringing. A day where debts are wiped out. A day where the records that we keep of wrongs that are done to us, or the fears we have about the wrongs that we've done to other people. A day when we no longer assign dignity to a person by what their output is into an economy. A day we no longer assign value to a person based on their social station or based on what they can do for us, right? It's going to be a jubilee year. It is not just about us. It is about our neighbors. It is about the world. It is God setting things right. God making us into a community. It is a beautiful vision. And this is the vision of God's future. And even though it is for all people, it is made visible to us in the person of Jesus. Because Jesus brings us that good news by living it. Every person that Jesus touches is one who is swept up into this beautiful jubilee year, right? And think of all those stories. And if you haven't heard a lot of stories from the Gospels about Jesus, or if you've heard them told badly in some other church, please stick around with us for what's coming. Because we're about to listen to a lot of stories about Jesus. But think of all the comfort that he gave to people. Think about the people that he healed. Think about the diseases that he took away. Think about the people who were cast out of the community that Jesus brought into the community. Think about all the families he rebuilt and repaired. Think about all of the words that he said to people who were busy trying to pull people apart. Think about the words he said to rebuke those people so that he could bring them together. Right? Jesus is just a giant jubilee year living among us in order to bring us to God in perfect peace and to bring us to our neighbors. And justice is just the ground floor. To bring us to our neighbors in justice. To bring us to our neighbors in love and charity and enjoying one another and learning from one another. This is the last chapter that Jesus, like kind of like a good version of the Terminator, is coming into our reality constantly to bring that good news. That's why we come back week after week after week to say that here is good news for the oppressed. Here's good news for the brokenhearted. Here is liberty for those of you who are in bondage. And anybody who's a prisoner out there, we're going to come and get you, because Jesus is the one bringing us. He is that jubilee that is coming into the world that we live in right now. It does this for a reason, right? When you know how it's going to turn out, you're not afraid. When you turn to that last chapter and you see that the character you like is still there, you haven't watched Mandalorian yet, but I hope. Right? When you turn to that last chapter and you see that character that you like is still there, you read the book with a little more passion, with a little more excitement. You read that book with a little less fear. Oh, I know that they're not going to kill this person. I know that everything's going to be okay. That's what Jesus is coming to do for us. We hear him say it. Don't be afraid. I'm from the future. It's here. It's going to be good. Don't be afraid. We know how it's going to turn out. That's what it means to be a Christian. That's what it means to have joy. It means that even though we've been through a very terrible year, we have joy because we know how it's going to turn out. And we don't turn our face from evil, and we don't get all Pollyanna, and we don't sit there doing pom-pom sessions like a lot of other churches do. We take suffering for what it is. We acknowledge it, but we put it in a place that says, I know that it's not going to last forever. Right? And to make this real, and you can put this in the comments, and some of you may be in a place where you're doing a little better than maybe when you were struggling at your worst point. But imagine if you could find yourself where you were at maybe your lowest and worst point. I've actually done this exercise with people who are kind of rounding out the toughness of their grief work, not their Greek work, that too, but the toughness of their grief work. I would say, write a letter to yourself the way that you felt those first weeks after the loss. Tell yourself what you wish you had known, right? Imagine what you would say to that person who was in the past, who was really struggling, who didn't know how things were going to turn out. And Jesus is that person from God writing that same letter to you. It's going to be okay. This is how things are going to turn out. I know you're on a cross right now, but that tomb is going to be empty. It's all going to come out okay. You're going to be with me. That's our joy. We're having a congregational meeting today. We're talking about our mission statement, and so many people have put a blessed amount of hard work into that. But as we walk into that as a congregation, all we're doing is just saying to ourselves and to this community, it's a jubilee. The future's here. Everything's going to be okay. We know how it turns out. We just want to let you know. We have all become, brothers and sisters, invaders from the future. We become invaders from the time where everything works out, where everything is good, where people are in community with one another. We are invaders. We are the last chapter. We know. We have the spoilers. And you know what? Our job is to go out and spoil this movie, which seems like such a terrible movie right now. Go out and spoil this movie for everyone. Tell them, with Jesus right alongside you, it's going to be okay. Amen.